We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Well, I got to look at this story here from Channel 5. You know, throughout the course of my life as a parent with my two older kids and my daughter, I'm just going to tell you, so I don't spank my daughter. I wish I did sometimes because I feel like there's no consequences. The boys were spanked a little bit, but look, I come from an era. Dave Klein, I'll ask you, do you come as a much younger man, mid-30s? Can we say mid-30s? Is that okay right now, or is that still
100% too, accurate for me? Yeah.
Okay. Man, you're getting older, Dave. Do you come from an era where your dad took the belt out and there were there was a belt used in punishment?
No. They used their hands, not the belt. And I mean, I was just spanked on the butt. Now that was pretty much
right,
it. Right.
I got the belt. I mean, I don't know about a lot. I will say this. I think I've said it before. Probably deserved the belt. But, you know, the belt was used, and I don't think it was used in an abusive way. I don't think I enjoyed it very much, but that was kind of the point. But now you have this story. St. Louis County police officer has been suspended without pay and charged with a felony after he said, police said he struck his 10-year-old son multiple times with a belt. Sean Liddell, 34, charged with third-degree domestic assault. It happened apparently last year. The belt caused pain, abrasions, and bruising. Look, there's a difference between using the belt and then, you know, when you go overboard with the belt, which is part of the reason why I think a lot of people don't like corporal punishment. And, you know, I've come up with ways to punish my daughter. But, man, I'll tell you what, the only thing that I've ever found that was effective was taking a phone away, and she's too young to have a phone. Dave, when the kids get older, I'm telling you, with my older kids, they would do anything to not have their phones taken away. That was their lifeline. So I just thought that was interesting. Chris Rufo is a guy that we've had on the show one time before because he found this, there's this critical race theory that is spreading through municipalities and different levels of government where training modules, if you will, are set up, or sometimes you even go to a conference to learn if you are white, how bad of a person you are simply for being white. Now, some of you might scoff at this notion, but it's true. And that's exactly what's going on. Let me give you an example from Mr. Rufo, who is in the Seattle area. He is a contributing editor at City Journal. He writes for Heritage, and he kind of stumbled into something that somebody sent him from the city of Seattle a few weeks ago, and some people might remember this, and this is a good example. It's all sort of along the same lines. The federal government's premier nuclear research lab hosted a three-day re-education camp for white males with the goal of exposing their, quote, white privilege and deconstructing, quote, white male culture. Here are the leaked documents from the race-segregated, taxpayer-funded session. And he's got a string. If you want to check this out, it's Real Chris Rufo. Rufo is R-U-F-O. Real Chris Rufo on Twitter. Last year, Sandia National Laboratories, which designs America's nuclear weapons, sent its white male executives to the La Posada Luxury Resort to undergo a mandatory training called White Men's Caucus on Eliminating Racism, Sexism, and Homophobia in Organizations. In the opening thought work session, the trainers demand that the white men make a list of associations about white male culture. The trainers write white supremacist, KKK, Aryan Nation, MAGA hat, swear, not making it up, privileged, mass killings. Mass killings are thrown in there because you're white. White male, when I think white male culture, I think going, you know, on the golf course, going to the bar, drinking with my buddies, and mass killings are right up there, right? When I'm wearing my MAGA hat. It's just ridiculous. The trainers insist that white males must, quote, work hard together to understand their white privilege, male privilege, heterosexual privilege. I got the trifecta. Pretty happy about that. I get white, male, and heterosexual. Dave, I need a ding, ding, ding. They claim that white men benefit from positive stereotypes that far outweigh the Tim McVeighs and the Ted Kaczynskis of white maleness. That's actually, I can read you from the documents here. I mean, this is just, some of this stuff is really, really crazy. Male privilege. I can more easily put my work and work schedule first without regard to key obligations to my family and or significant others. I can, in many more situations than not, take up more time, get more respect, and be listened to more often than a woman. On the job, I am not judged by the attractiveness of my appearance. Well, that's BS, first of all. That last one, heterosexual privilege. Here we go. Here we go. Good Lord. Klein, I have not been in the building. Can you help me with something?
Happy to.
Okay. I have pictures of my wife and daughter at my desk. You've probably seen them. You work in the same room, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you can find your desk, sometimes it's just, you know, under piles
all
of
right,
papers.
Right.
But no, that's not the point. I know, you're right. Go on.
Can you do me a favor? Can you do me a favor and grab those pictures, rip them off my desk? I would say don't even bring them to me, Dave. I would throw them in the trash. Don't let this go on another day because I have heterosexual privilege by putting those pictures. If you don't believe me, here's what the document says that the federal government's had a look at. I can have pictures of loved ones on my desk and not have to worry about what people think because I'm heterosexual. I can talk about what I did last weekend without having to edit what I say. Well, that's not true either. I have to edit what I say all the time because I do things that I probably shouldn't do. I can bring a date to a company function and offsite events to which spouses are invited without the risk of negatively affecting my career. Well, that kind of depends. I mean, if you leave your wife at home and you bring your girlfriend, yeah, you're going to probably get in maybe a little trouble there, but... This guy, this stuff, it really isn't funny because it's horrifying when you think about what they're actually doing right now. Man, if you're next, here it is. The white male employees must expose the roots of white male culture, which consists of rugged individualism, a can-do attitude, hard work, and striving towards success. That's bad. That sounds good. Rugged individualism, I'm just set you straight here this afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. If you think that rugged individualism, a can-do attitude, hard work, and striving towards success is something that you're proud of, that you can take pride in your career path, because I know that I worked pretty hard at my career, and I did things I wouldn't give up. I made sure that I knocked on as many doors as possible. There's this guy that I know who does TV in Chicago at the Fox station up there. And he came from Houston. I used to go on movie junkets with him. And when he was in Houston, this kid started doing interviews with celebrities when he was 20, 21 years old, because he sent an email to every television station or a letter, both, every day of his life until they were so sick of him that they had to say, okay, we're going to give you a shot, right? There are things that many of us have done. I've done these things in my career where I didn't want to give up and I wanted to make sure that I got what I was hoping that I earned. And I've been turned away from positions having worked hard. But that can-do attitude is devastating toward women. It is devastating toward women. Why? I don't know. But that's what they say here. Corporate culture in the U.S. is heavily influenced and affected by status and rank. Thus, the natural consequence is to have those who don't fit the in-group place in a lesser position. Success in white male terms is often linked to evaluating one's place in the hierarchy. Power and success is derived from a person's organizational status and positional rank. The higher the individual's position, the more status the person has. So who cares? In fact, the trainers claim that the white male culture leads to lower quality of life at work and home, reduced life expectancy, unproductive relationships, and high stress. It also forces this, quote, white male standard on women and minorities. In a subsequent session, and by the way, Rufo's got all these documents. So he's got this amazing thread. I'll retweet it. You can follow me at Mark Reardon KMOX. You can read the whole thing. You can see all the documents that I'm referring to, too. Let's see here. Lower quality of life. In subsequent sessions, the white males must publicly recite a series of white privilege statements and male privilege statements. They must accept their complicity in the white male system and their role in creating oppressions. Oh. White privilege. White people can loiter at Starbucks without having the police called. Being deemed as not having enough money to buy a house, car, etc. before I fill out paperwork. The list goes on. I don't have to remove my family pictures from my house for a quicker sale of my house. All these things. What exactly is the, what's the goal here? To make white people feel guilty? That's the goal. Are we achieving anything here? Finally, as the re-education camp concludes, the white males must write letters directed to white women, people of color, and other groups regarding the meaning of this caucus experience. They apologize for their privilege and pledge to become better allies. And these idiots wrote letters because they had to. They had to write letters, like you're writing a letter to a teacher or an apology letter or something. Or I will not write on the chalkboard, or I will not, whatever the teachers made you do. This is, as Chris Rufo has said, taxpayer-funded pseudoscience. And it's deeply divisive. What Congress should do, I think what Chris Rufo is at, Congress should pass a law to abolish critical race theory in the federal government. And then, because this stuff is everywhere. It's in, if we have members of the Board of Aldermen or someone in the mayor's office in the city of St. Louis or one of the nutbags on the St. Louis County Council like Lisa Clancy listening to me right now, now they wouldn't do that. They have to listen to NPR, right? But if they heard this idea, they're searching it out. They're going to my site because they want to instill it in government locally. They think this stuff is great. If we can make white males, as many of them as possible, no matter how hard they worked and what they achieved, if we can make them feel as guilty as possible for being white, even though they've not done anything else wrong to expose their racist ways, that's the goal. So I'm sorry. I am sorry for being white and successful. And I'll write my apology letters. 317 at KMOX.
You're listening to The Mark Reardon Show.
When you're out of my sight, you must constantly Twitter me exactly what you're up to.
Follow Mark on Twitter at Mark Reardon, KMOX.
You hear about the mass shooting in Washington, D.C. over the weekend? Of course you didn't, because nobody heard about it. Maybe you heard a little bit about it. It's actually an amazing story, and I'll share that for you here in just a couple of minutes. There was a, Kevin Wheeler's coming up at the bottom of the hour to talk baseball, football, see where the Cardinals are, all this stuff. Not a whole lot of information on the Redbirds, but I know Kevin will have some thoughts on college football in particular. I do think it's interesting that, you know, the Big 12, the SEC, holding strong right now. Story in our local paper this morning, as Missouri classrooms begin to fill in the pandemic, experts say lawsuits will follow. So, you know, this is one of those questions that I've had all along when it comes to COVID. There's someone that is quoted in here. Susan Goldammer, who is an attorney, says this is going to be a lawyer field day. I thought we'd call in Mark Cantor, Cantor Injury Law, who is a friend, fine sponsor of the program, to see what he thought about this. Mr. Cantor, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Last time, I think we talked a little bit about, you know, these lawsuits from maybe a business perspective, but is there potential liability here for students, or I guess for schools, if you will, if something happens at a school?
You know, Cantor Injury Law is not accepting these cases. I think they're frivolous on their face, and, you know, we're in this pandemic together, so I view that as an un-American cause of action. You know, these schools, they can't win. They get sued if they open, yeah, and they get sued if they close. So we're not handling those cases. I don't think that it's going to be a field day for lawyers. This firm's not taking them because I don't think they're valid. And I think most juries would agree. You don't have a duty to warn of a danger when the injured party has actual knowledge of the danger. I mean, that would just be stupid. So, you know, COVID is everywhere. And the parents know that, and these schools are giving people alternatives. So, you know, from a jury perspective, and, you know, when we analyze cases, we say, what's a jury going to do? I don't like these cases. I don't think they're good. So, you know, every case is different. You know, you could present a fact pattern that maybe I'd say, well, given those facts, you know, if they knowingly or intentionally spread COVID, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, that would be one of those situations where, you know, if someone, I don't even know what the scenario would be, but you've seen a couple of idiots out there who have on purpose, purposefully coughed on other people or spit or something like that. I mean, that would maybe be something that would take a step or a leap into a different stratosphere here. But what the story said this morning is that most, and you can kind of verify this, so our school districts regularly shielded from a lot of lawsuits anyway, but there are some exceptions, or how does that typically work? And is it the same for like school districts, Mark, and also colleges and universities, or are those separate?
So great questions. There's something in the law called sovereign immunity. So sovereign immunity came from the British common law where you couldn't sue the king. In Missouri, we have sovereign immunity for public schools. So if you're talking about a public university or a public elementary school with public funds under 537.600 of the revised Missouri statutes, there is sovereign immunity. Now, there is an exception for premises liability. So schools can be sued for premises liability, but there's a whole series of case law that says, you know, that obviously the plaintiff, the person that gets COVID, would have the burden of proof. So you have to prove that you got it from school, which will be a very difficult burden, and you'll have to get over the sovereign immunity. By the way, these schools are insured by something called MUSIC, the Missouri United School Insurance Company, and it's a not-for-profit insurance corporation. So it's like suing your church. I find it bad. You know, I don't think it's in good form to sue a not-for-profit. That's not something Cantor Injury Law is interested in. And so you ask good questions. It's different if it's public versus private. You know, a private institution doesn't have the same governmental protections. But, you know, I'm frankly tired of everyone looking at the government as the source of either the problem or the solution. You know, everyone has a right to, you know, keep your kid at home. And I'm not a scientist, but from what I've seen, the kids are recovering well from this if they even get it. So,
yeah, well, that is true.
So, you know, I think it's time to open the schools. I'm personally at Cantor Injury Law. We got 7 lawyers. I've told my lawyers, you know, we're not taking these cases based on generic facts. I don't think that they're valid. I think they're frivolous. I don't think it's going to be, you know, open the floodgates of litigation.
That's good to hear.
Yeah. So, you know, if you get a, it's not like, so we're defining negligence, which is carelessness, right? So in a car accident, you have the duty to operate with the highest degree of care, that degree of care that a very careful person utilizes under the same or similar circumstance. It's different for premises liability. So you got to show, for the school to be negligent, you know, maybe they're not following their protocols, okay, but it's got to be an egregious error. And then you still have to prove it came from school. So frankly, I think that the concern is overblown. I think it's a good talking point, but again, I've been in the litigation business for 30 years, and these aren't cases I want because I don't find them to be valid. So
good information, and I'm with you on the schools. Mark Cantor, Cantor Injury Law. You can find him at cantorinjurylaw.com. Mark, always appreciate it. I appreciate coming on here this afternoon.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it a lot. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Mark. 3:28. Carol's got the news. We're still waiting on this Harris-Biden event this afternoon. Looks like the motorcade from Joe Biden's house took off, so maybe they're getting a little bit closer to that. I mentioned this, and I wanted to squeeze this in. I'm off for the next couple of days. There was this amazing story that was in Washington, D.C. Jazz Shaw wrote about it at hotair.com. I saw a quick clip of this. This was over the weekend on Sunday, and multiple people shot. Early morning hours Sunday in Washington, D.C., 17-year-old male shot dead, 20 people shot. So it was realistically and legitimately one of the worst mass shootings of the year in this country. But unless you watch the local news, or maybe even Fox, because they showed a couple of clips, you didn't hear about it. Now, the reason is because it doesn't fit the narrative. So there's a teenage father who's dead, 20 people shot, including an off-duty D.C. police officer at this party. Essentially, it was, well, look, it's not the type of shooting that fits the narrative that we've seen all along. So you're not going to get, if it's gang violence where you have African-Americans shooting other African-Americans in an outbreak like this. I mean, this thing was nuts, and you're lucky that no one else was killed. It's amazing when you see the stories here and just the aftermath of this shooting that nobody else was killed. I mean, it could have been, well, actually, it was a bloodbath. There was blood everywhere. People were injured. And again, if you do the you know, because they have different standards that measure mass shootings, we're told all the time, you know, in the aftermath of a school shooting, which may be one of the only good things about the pandemic here is we won't have school shootings. We are told all the time about how many mass shootings we've had in this country because of the definitions of mass shootings. This was a mass shooting, but no one's heard of it. 3:30 at the Voice of St. Louis.
News Radio 1120 KMOX, the voice of the Cardinals.
Oh, that just reminded me, the bumper music. We have a, Dave, remind me, we have a, an audio cut of the day. We'll make it a musical one here this afternoon. I think you know what I'm going to do because you pulled the audio. So I just saw this story, went on to ESPN because I knew we were talking with sports expert Kevin Wheeler this afternoon, and I can't scoop him on anything. But did you see, maybe I did scoop you on this, this is not a surprise, sports books have halted betting on college football because no one knows what the hell's going on. That seemed to be probably a good move at this point. Kevin, how are you?
I'm good, Mark. And yeah, that seemed like a rather obvious thing. At some point, with conferences canceling, they're going to pull everything off the board and see where it goes.
Do you think it's realistically possible that the SEC and the Big 12 and maybe a couple other schools go rogue here just a little bit and play football despite the Big 10 and the Pac-12 and others saying they're not going to?
Yeah, I think it's definitely possible. I mean, you know, a lot of this, and this is something I've been following for months, Mark, and talking about for months with college football. I mean, we have to consider where these conferences are, what the rules are in the states, what the guidelines are in those various states. And look, if you look at some of the states with the most difficult restrictions, they're in the Big 10 and Pac-12 country, right? I mean, so when we take that into account with, you know, the just the general approach of the leadership in those two conferences and then compare that to the Big 12, ACC, SEC, yeah, I think it's possible that they go for it. I mean, look at the most of the South and most of the Southeast. I mean, their states are more open than, say, California or Michigan or Illinois. And I'd say that, yeah, that's a definite possibility that they'll go ahead if they can figure it out. Now, that doesn't mean that they've decided that yet. I mean, Bob Bowlsby of the Big 12 has still been clear that they're just waiting, like they're putting this decision off. They don't feel like it needs to be made now.
Yeah, and you know, look, there's a lot of things that could happen. I guess I give them points for trying to hang in there. And I'd be curious to see what your reaction is, because I think that Trevor Lawrence and others, they make legitimate points when they say, look, we may be safer here on campus with all these procedures and, you know, the doctors and the staff than we would potentially being at home going on our own. I mean, you can't say that for certain, but you could make a case for it, I think.
You could. I mean, and I think in every situation it's different. Like, some guys might be better off on campus like that, but let's also consider that they're college students, and some of these guys are going to do stupid things, and they're going to go to big campus parties, or they're going to do things that they shouldn't be. And maybe those particular players are better off not being there. So I think a lot of it has to do with the temperament and the discipline of the player. If you've got guys that are disciplined and focused, and look, we've seen this in baseball, Mark. I mean, there have been plenty of cases already with the Marlins. We know very well with the Cardinals, and now the Indians with two pitchers who snuck out of the team hotel. You know, these are grown men doing this. Do we really expect that college football players aren't going to do this too? I think it's a good point, and it's definitely something to consider. But I would also argue that these guys are probably going to be on or around campus anyway. Because it's not like football is just going to stop. They're just not going to be able to play games and have practice and equipment. They're still probably going to be lifting. They're probably going to be doing prep work. And if things don't work out for the fall for these conferences, they're probably going to try to play shortly after the start of the new year.
Let me correct you on one thing. That would be the baseball team that is the Cleveland baseball team. I think we have to go to the Cleveland baseball team because they're changing. They're going to try to change that name as well. Hockey tonight. The Blues are in action. Let's handicap this right now. Obviously, what happened in the you know, the seeding games doesn't really matter, but the Canucks are tough. They've been tough with the Blues, haven't they?
Yeah, they're tough, Matt. You know, they're a very young and dynamic team. They come at you in a lot of different ways. I mean, Patterson's one of the better young players in the league. And I think you know, the Vancouver team, in terms of experience, reminds me of where the Blues were, you know, a handful of years ago, where you had a lot of younger guys and they were kind of, you know, becoming a playoff team. But, you know, they still have a lot to learn about that kind of a series. I'm not particularly worried about what happened in the pool play. I know Vancouver looked hot and I know the Blues didn't. But, I mean, look, some of this was also about necessity, right? The Blues were essentially playing exhibition games and Vancouver was playing to get in. So I don't worry too much about that. But, yeah, the matchup is a question. But I'd say when you look at depth, experience, coaching, goaltending, I mean, all of those things favor the Blues.
Do you have – I mean, I want to ask you a little bit about baseball and the Cardinals, but is there really anything to talk about with the Cardinals right now? It's just basically wait and see, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we may find out today if the last set of tests went okay and that may end up clearing them to play on Friday. You know, we'll see. I mean, these guys haven't done anything for 10 or 11 days, so it's going to be interesting to see, you know, whatever, you know, what kind of ramp up they're going to get. I mean, do they just get like one day workout and then they have to go to Chicago and play? I don't know where we stand at the moment. I know earlier today the story was, and I think I originally saw it from Bob Nightingale, but I know everybody in town is on it too, that, you know, if they go today with the results, I guess they got from the tests on Monday, then, and they're clear, they might be cleared to go on Friday, but obviously hasn't happened yet. So I'm fingers crossed, man. I don't know that anything's a sure thing as we found out, but I'd be willing to bet by Monday they'll be playing, if not by Friday or Saturday.
Meantime, the stupid Cubs are 11-3. 11-3, beating up on the baseball club from Cleveland 7-1 last night.
Yeah, they're good. I mean, you know, I don't think, you know, in terms of a talent gap, they're that much better than anybody else in the division, but they've gotten off to the hot start in a short season. I mean, what do you need to establish yourself as a top contender? All you need is about a 10 or 11 game stretch where you play great, and that's what they've had. So, you know, I mean, they're definitely kind of in front with everybody else looking ahead. And of course, the Cardinals are, they've only played 5 games, so they're looking up at everybody wondering how in the world all this is going to work. But yeah, the Cubs thing seems legit.
So is there, I'll kind of let you go on this, is there a scenario, I mean, what do you think is going to happen? Let's say the Cardinals get back this weekend, best case scenario, it was good. So then they play the White Sox. But what happens, do they start immediately rescheduling some games, or is it just like, okay, we're not going to worry about that, we're going to see if we can push forward and do this on win percentage? Or are we going to have double headers every day?
I think you might get both, because even with a lot of doubleheaders, the Cardinals are going to have I can't see how you get to 60 games. I don't see how they fit in 55 games and the number of days that they'll have left, but they might be able to get 50. So if, you know, if you're only playing 53, 54, 55 games, that's not that big of a deal. They'll go by percentage. And that, in fact, Major League Baseball's already said that's the plan. As long as you have a representative number, I think where teams would be upset, Mark, is if a team plays 42 games and still gets in. I mean, that's a big difference. That's only 2/3 of the season for others. So I think if they get above 50, then that percentage will play out and they'll be all right.
Kevin Wheeler with us this afternoon. I appreciate it. We got the Blues tonight, the Cardinals hopefully this weekend. We will talk soon, Kevin. Thank you so much.
Hey, anytime, buddy. We'll talk to you later.
3:46. We're still waiting on the Biden-Harris campaign event. It's like over 2 hours long. Dave Cantonese, who used to cover Missouri politics, he's a national guy right now with McClatchy, but he knows Missouri politics very well, said new DNC rule, if the Biden-Harris event starts more than an hour late, hashtag Veep States starts over. So they're definitely more than an hour late. I think he was joking, just being a little jokey. 3:47, we'll take a break. We'll get traffic for you. Also, an audio cut of the day. We're going to air some of this event in Wilmington, Delaware, when it starts as well, right here on KMOX.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Yeah, I told you a little earlier this hour it was going to be a musical audio cut of the day. It's sponsored by the Good Feet Store, pain relief and comfort to fit any budget. Everybody knows this song, right? Maybe you didn't know who did it, but Dave, let's run with it here. Trini Lopez a little bit, If I Had a Hammer. This was a huge hit. That was one of his biggest records. He also did Lemon Tree, and of course, both became hits for Peter, Paul, and Mary several years earlier. So he still did those and he soared high on the Billboard chart, but he also did this song, Kansas City. I love this song, Kansas City. Bruce Springsteen's covered this one over the years as well. He was an actor too. Trini Lopez actually was in gosh, if I think about it here, I think it was The Dirty Dozen. Maybe a couple other movies as well. But here's the part that's also very interesting about Mr. Trini Lopez, who died yesterday. Complications linked to COVID-19. He's also responsible for this sound quite a bit. Dave Grohl put this on Instagram about Trini Lopez. Trini not only left a beautiful musical legacy of his own, but also unknowingly helped shape the sound of the Foo Fighters from day one. Every album we have ever made, from the first to the latest, was recorded with my red 1967 Trini Lopez signature guitar. It is the sound of our band and my most prized possession from the day I bought it in 1992. Thank you, Trini, for all your contributions. You will be missed by many, remembered by all. So even you young kids out there who had no idea who did the song If I Had a Hammer or Kansas City, you now know why Trini Lopez was so important to the world of music. That's your audio cut of the day.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.